more dirt and Sprague.
Where are you going? And he's like, I'm going bowling. I just started laughing because I'm like, of course you're going bowling on a random Tuesday night.
Sounds like
night.
A great Tuesday night.
It's breakfast time with Dirt and Sprague.
Now, do you have your own ball?
I have two balls.
Starting your day with a big cup of dirt and a little splash of Sprague.
Your spare ball, you don't want it to hook as much, so it will go straighter. And then the strike ball, you want to be able to get some crank on that.
Heat on that.
When you hit the pocket, you get big pin action.
Well, everybody wants to hit the pocket. I mean, come on now.
Dirt and Sprague on the Fan Sports Network.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour number three. Dirt and Sprague here. Portland Sports Leader, 105.1 FM, The Fan, 1080 AM, the Odyssey app, live on YouTube. Good morning, everybody. Hope you're, what is today, Wednesday? Your Wednesdays are off to a great start.
Jeez, oh, Pete.
Here's what we got coming up over the next 2 hours on the radio program. 1 hour from now, the Dirty Poll interview will take place at 9 o'clock this morning. Who will it be? I'll have to tune in to find out. Who is number 8 in the college football preseason rankings, according to yours truly?
Epa!
It's coming up 1 hour from now. Stat or story, slightly after that at 9:27, as it is on every Wednesday. So that is what is around the corner. And I got a ton of stuff in the NFL in my notes for later on this hour. I would like to. I did not plan to start here, but I did want to do a little bit of college football smorgasbord, if you will. And I'm going to ask this question, and Oregon State fan, please don't get upset with me. I feel like whenever Oregon State stuff happens, you either love me or you hate me or
well,
I'm patronizing.
Well, you were the hero yesterday.
Yesterday I was a hero.
I was more a villain.
I was not meaning to be the hero, but sometimes when I do those segments, everybody thinks I'm like patronizing them, and I'm like, I'm not trying to patronize you. I just am a positive person. I apologize.
A positive person? You shave your head in distress.
I'm a positive Patty over here, all right?
She can't stop it from coming.
This text came in, and it did get me thinking, will this ever be something? Are we to the point of talking about that yet? And what that is you mentioned Oregon State fan yesterday jumping into our mentions and saying, Dirt, thanks for being our hero. And to that I say, you're welcome, Beaver fan. I'm here for you. But I mentioned, like, hey, look at their schedule. Mm-hmm. They've had Washington State's number as of late. That was a thing that I said on the air earlier. And you know what that has led to?
What's it led to?
Cougar fan chiming in. Saying, I know it's late, but Oregon State's 3-7 in their last 10 games against Washington State. I don't think that's having their number. Go Cougs.
I think that's a very valid response.
Totally fair. Yeah. Totally valid.
Didn't you say we own them?
I didn't say own. I didn't say own. I said had their number. Now, mainly I was just thinking in the last 2 years, because didn't you beat them 2 years ago? Well, Oregon State was dog-ass, and you guys beat them in Corvallis.
Yeah, we
at
beat
the end
in
of
Corvallis.
The year.
Yeah.
And then last year you played twice?
We beat them once.
And you split.
Yeah.
So you won 2 out of 3 in the new look Pac-12 era. That was mainly my point.
Let me make sure we won, because we only won 2 games last year, so it's...
That's right.
I'm pretty sure the special teams guy won the game.
I remember a win
and
late
he did
in
the interview.
Yeah. I feel like I remember that.
God. The seasons happen, and we're so into it, and then
I know.
We instantly
you
forget elements of it. But also that season, yeah, they won 10-7.
And then, but they played twice, right?
Yeah.
And then Washington State beat them the second time?
Well, they played the first time. Hold on a second.
Or did Washington State beat them the first time and then lose to them the second time?
Yeah, so.
Because they played like twice in a month or something at the end of the year
because
they didn't have enough opponents on the schedule?
I still can't believe they lost that Fresno game.
Oh,
the Houston game they should have won.
Yeah, I mean, they easily could have had 3 or 4 more. If they could just function.
App State.
Special teams. Yeah, dude.
Yeah, the Cougs got them when they played the second time at the end of November. So they played twice in November. They won 10-7.
Okay.
And then the Cougs bludgeoned them 32-8.
Okay, so they killed them the second time around in Pullman. So that was, to be fair to me, that was mainly my argument. But the question that spawned out of that for me is, will that ever be a rivalry?
You need real stakes, and you need it to go for a real amount of time for it to be a rivalry. I know, you know Patrick has said this to me on and off the air in a roundabout way of like, no, we're rivals, you know, and it's like, dude, you're never going to feel the way about Oregon State that you feel about Washington.
No.
And I know Oregon is in a weird spot where a lot of them view Washington as the rival and have for quite some time. But also, you can't just act like 40 years of history between Oregon and Oregon State
never
happened, right?
Or so, that 19 straight runs didn't just happen
exactly.
In Dan Lanning's first year. It's not like it's been 37 years since Oregon State won the game.
I mean, they traded back and forth wins for
right.
a decade plus, it felt like. So
right.
I guess what's tough to me is there needs to be, hey, winner of this is going to represent the Pac-12 and the chance to go to the playoff, not, hey, winner of this wins their 5th game of the year.
That's fair.
I could not care less.
That's fair.
If that's what the game is boiled down to, if you say, hey, this is that weird morphed conference title game where they put the two teams that can win the conference at the end of the year.
Yeah.
That's a genius idea.
Brilliant.
If you get a few of those, then yeah, you can start to feel something. But I said this at the beginning of this whole thing, and I'll reiterate again. I want Oregon State to win, but I don't emotionally feel anything about playing Washington State that leaves me on like any kind of real edge.
So you need, it sounds like in order for that to kick up, there needs to be almost a segment of like heartbreak there where like you're having a good year and Washington State snatches it from you at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And you have a chance to be like the G6 rep in the playoff and you're 7-1. And then you go up to Pullman and they beat you on an upset and you go, damn it, there go the Cougs. And they steal an opportunity from you.
You also can't manufacture rivalry.
No.
You have to have rivalry built out of honest disdain and stakes and pain and happiness. And the history of Oregon State, Washington State is not.
It's not that, no.
There's been some good games.
Yeah.
Some memorable moments. And
blowouts either way.
Absolutely. Yeah. That has happened. But yeah, man, I know other people can have this ability. I can't. I can't go into a Washington State game. I'm not going to go into that game and go, oh, it's rivalry week. It's like, whatever. It's no different to me than playing Colorado State. The only difference is I'm more familiar with Washington State because of the history of what the Pac-12 once was. So for me, and I can only speak for me, and I know Oregon State fan largely feels the opposite of how I feel about a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe they've gotten there. Maybe Cook fans has gotten there. I know. You cannot tell me it's a rivalry and I'm supposed to treat it as such. It has to have real wear and tear on it for me to feel any kind of rivalry.
I'm going to put this up as a poll question because I agree with you. Like, if I were in the fan base, that would be my thought as well. There has to be a shared pain, if you will, or you did something, you stole an opportunity from us, or there was something on the line. Like, we deal with this a lot as Blazer fans where we try and make everybody our rival, and it's like, that's not a rivalry. It's either one-sided and we've never beaten you, or we're just making something up from a regular season game. Like, if you haven't played in the playoffs, you can't be a rival yet. Or they beat us in a game 6 or a game 7. Like, that's how that stuff's brewed over time.
Yeah.
And it'd be the animosity builds. That's like, the Lakers were never a rival of us, we were never a rival of the Lakers because we very rarely ever beat them. But they became a rival of us because they beat us every year in the playoffs. You get there and what happened? There's Kobe and Shaq. See you later. See you next season. And that became the animosity build as time went on. So I was just curious. I just saw that text from a Cougar fan. It's a funny note that they've won 7 of the last 10 against Oregon State. I'm going to put this up as a poll question for Oregon State or Washington State fans. Do you view the other as a rival as of now? Because they're the two that are left from the old Pac-12.
I just think sport in general tells us, and football is really good at this, of like, you can't fake rivalry. You just know it when you see it and you feel it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't know how the Pac-12 is going to go as a conference. It may be in the running to represent the Group of Six seemingly every year. That's certainly the hope. But, like, there could be a real chance that randomly Jim Moore is barking across the field at Jamarcus Shepard in a close game. And you're like, well, I kind of hate Colorado State now. And then the next year, they're both still there. And they're barking again. And now you could see it with the players and feel it. Like, that is more what happens in those instances than saying, well, we're the only two remaining from the conference, so we have to be rivals. We played twice in a season, which has never happened, so now we're rivals. It's like that, you know, what was the coach's name? Was it Brent Keyes?
No, not Brent Keyes. Rob Akey. Thank you.
When Rob Akey did his post game and they beat the Cougs.
The Cajun Beaver.
In November, I mean, it was a funny moment, but yeah. I wasn't like, oh, man, we beat our rival.
Right.
You know, there was none of that emotional pull.
Coming in, telling Patrick Harris to suck it when you walked in.
Well, he wants to do it. He wants
that's
to
why
lean
I asked, because he tries to do
I
it.
I just don't. Yeah. I can't be bothered by it.
I know.
I'm sorry. You've not been relevant enough for most of my life and nor been a thorn in my side, even if you've beaten Oregon State 7 out of 10. That's an impressive run. I'm giving you that, but I'm not like, I haven't every year lived by, oh, Washington State got us.
Yeah.
Like, I expect Washington State to be a pain in the ass, no different than when Paul Wolf was coaching Washington State.
Right.
Domination.
Yeah.
That was my college experience, was Paul Wolf.
0-12 Cougs.
Or yeah.
No, 1-11. Then they go 1-11.
Terrible
maybe.
Cougs.
Yeah.
2-10 Cougs, you know?
It's interesting. I hope it turns into that because I think it'd be a lot of fun for the fan bases where there's a mixture of respect but also animosity. I've seen, and look, social media is not real life, obviously. I've seen a lot of back and forth between Oregon State fans and Boise State fans over the last handful of months. Basically, Boise State fans running their mouth of, look at our record over the last 20 years, and Oregon State fans saying, yeah, because you played in the Mountain West. Like, not to take away from what they've accomplished, and Boise State's been a very good program for a long time.
Yeah, but Oregon State is seemingly in the Mountain West, so you've gotten kind of relegated to their level, and
yes.
You are nowhere near them.
Well, you're also in a different spot because you were the one that got relegated, so you're starting over, right? Boise State is essentially ascending, and you're descending to the conference that you're in right now.
I think Boise State's maintained.
And maybe they're just simply maintaining.
Yeah.
That's fine. But it's just the idea of, like, yeah, if you put Oregon State over the last 20 years in the Mountain West, what's their win-loss record difference? It's a little bit different. I don't know if you're dominant or you're winning to the level of Boise State, but I would say you would have a few more wins on your books if you're playing Mountain West teams over the last 20 years than all the games you lost to, say, Oregon or USC or some of the bigger teams in the old Pac-12. So I was just curious. That poll question's up. You can go vote at Turn Spring on Twitter. Do you view Washington State and Oregon State as rivals? I did see this, and I was intrigued by it. I don't know where some of the logic comes from, but I'm always intrigued on where is the money and where are the tickets going.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to throw some of these at you. These are according to BetMGM, and these are the most bet on overs and unders in college football. Now, some of these are like, yeah, like when you hear the Cowboys, a lot of people bet on the Cowboys every year just because there's a lot of Cowboy fans out there. So the most bet overs in college football this year based on the volume of tickets, your top five, Oklahoma's number one at 8.5.
That's a really low number.
Schedule's brutal, but I agree with you.
But the amount of returning talent.
I would bet the over, but Colorado's number two at 4.5. Yeah, all right, have fun. Nebraska 3 at 5.5. Is this the year?
5.5 is Nebraska's?
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Schedule's brutal for them, too.
There should be a qualifier in these contracts for the Nebraskas of college football. If we go in, what is this, his third year?
Oh, I think we're going into year four.
He's only a year behind Lanning?
I think so. Let me double check. You can finish your thought. Let me Google.
If you're going into year whatever we find out.
He's going into year four. If we're going into year four
at Nebraska, we have a stipulation in our contracts that say if Vegas puts your over under at 5.5, we can legally fire you with no buyout.
The buyout is nullified.
<It's> nullified.
We'll let you coach the season, but the buyout is gone.
Dude,
it's out the window.
5.5 is depressingly low.
Yeah, year one for Matt Rhule, they go 5-7. Year two, 7-6. Hey, we made a bowl game last year, 7-6 again. Number four on the list is UCLA and your guy Bob Chesney. 6.5 for UCLA.
Yeah, and they're one that, like, I know we've noted how many people are. He was on the Bill Simmons podcast, by the way. Bill Simmons is like a pseudo booster for UCLA now because the guy coached at Holy Cross for like a year.
It's actually really funny. I've seen a huge blowback in terms of the online community being pissed at Bill Simmons for that because this guy, as you mentioned, coaches at his alma mater and he did nothing to support or profile the program. And now he's coaching at UCLA and he's having him on his podcast.
Well, it's a brilliant move by Chesney,
like,
by the
dude,
way.
Dude, where were you at when he literally coached your alma mater, and you couldn't give two S's.
But when your team is Holy Cross level, should you care that much? But anyways, they are probably the most interesting to me because they are, I think, third in transfer portal players.
Yep, they just got one of their rulings on a kid who transferred from JMU who's going to be eligible for this year, some linebacker.
I hate doing it because it's an easy trap to fall in. Is he going to be able to do? Is he going to literally follow Cignetti? Is UCLA going to randomly
be pretty wild
10-2 or 9-3 this year and be like, when does Oregon play them? We went over their schedule.
Early October, I believe they come to Autzen Stadium.
Are we going to go, holy crap, UCLA's coming to town? And
they're undefeated.
Yeah, like I wonder if we're going to be in that situation.
It's interesting for them because, and we've talked about this before, so not to be a broken record, really fun start to their season. That game at Cal in the opening weekend of the year, it's the old Pac-12 After Dark game, 7 o'clock or 7:30 on ESPN. That's you get two new coaches, first ever games for both programs, returning starting quarterbacks, expectations to improve. Like, that's a really fun game that could kind of go either way. But yeah, they have a chance. If they win that game, here's UCLA's schedule until they come to Oregon on October 10th. You ready for this? So they play at Cal to open, you get San Diego State at home, Purdue at home, and then you go on the road to Maryland.
I mean, if you can win that opening Cal game, you're going to have the confidence and probably get through most of that.
There's a world
the
where
the Maryland one is weird just because you got to travel.
Time travel, totally get it. Time travel, time zone travel. but there's a world that exists where they're 4-0 going into Autzen Stadium on October 10th, which
and
would make
exciting,
that game far more entertaining. Last on this list of most bet overs is Michigan State at 4.5. So maybe you're just buying value there because the win total is so low. On the most bet unders this year in terms of tickets, Iowa State under 4.5 is number one. All right. Iowa is number two at 7.5, which I would just say.
These are unders?
These are unders.
Why would you bet under on Iowa?
I don't
get it.
They're
going to be at a minimum 8-4.
Every year, dude. Their offense blows and they win 8 games every year.
CBS did a overrated, underrated in the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
And they only highlighted, I think, 7 of the 18 teams or whatever is in that conference. And so I was like, I clicked it and I was reading through and I'm like, oh, what if Oregon's going to be on this? And USC is on it.
Mm-hmm.
And Minnesota's on it, and they're running through it. It says Iowa. So USC's was overrated. Minnesota's was underrated.
Yeah.
It gets to Iowa. It says both.
Yeah, the overrated and underrated simultaneously.
They're going to win more games than you know,
yes.
And then they're never going to be close in winning the biggest of their games.
No, they're never going to be elite, but they're going to win some games that they probably shouldn't win. That's a good one. North Carolina's under a 4.5 is number three on the list. Ironically, UCLA is also on this list, so they're attracting a lot of money both directions, under 6.5.
Yeah.
And then last but not least is Penn State under 9.5. So those are the most bet in terms of tickets, overs and unders in college football this year from around the country. Let's go to the National Football League, something that's a super far look ahead in terms of a peekaboo. We got some injury scares from NFL camps, and we'll dive in. Also, some more details. He called 3 times. What did he use? What was his name? What did he use? We'll dive into it next on The Fan. All righty, welcome back in. 8:27. We'll go to the Dirty Poll, top of the hour. Who is number 8? Find out in about 33 minutes from now. We got Stat or Story in the final hour of the show. Lots still to get to on the old radio program.
A very good reminder, too, of our poll question on visors.
Yes.
Left off, debatably, should have been on.
Who's our omission?
I'm a man. I'm 40.
Yeah, that's a good one. My Gundy's solid.
But then at the end, he grew that beautiful mullet and just didn't rock anything.
Yeah, I think he just had a mullet last
year. I think it was the last couple of years. He just styled his hair.
That is a very big key of the, as somebody who tried to become visor guy in golf, and I still have visors. I love wearing the visor. It's an empowering feeling to put one on. You got to have the right hair for it. There's got to be a volume of hair mixed with visor, and that's the hard part for me in the summer. I'm usually a buzz cut guy, and it just doesn't look as good with the buzz cut. Doesn't quite have the same fit. When you look at a lot of the hairdos and you think of historic visors,
you think,
there's a little bit of flippage. It's
that
coming
chip,
out
though, didn't
it's kind of popping out of the top a little bit. Chip did. He wasn't super long, but he wasn't like buzzed or bald. Like the bald visor, I don't know if I trust. Matt Nagy is a guy I think of with a bald visor, and I just immediately don't trust you.
Matt Nagy, that's an interesting one, yeah.
He was bald and he wore a visor, and it just doesn't look the same if you don't have hair coming out of the top.
How did nobody tell Matt Nagy, you look just better bald?
Just wear a
The visor kind of looks ridiculous.
Yeah.
Just be bald and have the headset on.
Cover it a circle around
also,
your
is
head?
That comfortable to have a visor with no hair and a headset?
I'll tell you when I'm bald because it's going to be there pretty soon. I won't be wearing the headset, but I'll let you know. I'll give it a shot.
Thanks.
A couple of thoughts that came in on the rivalry topic that I found interesting. One was on the MLS doing this, saying you see this a lot in the MLS. There's very few OG, is it derbies? Darbies? What, derbies? They call them derbies?
Darbies.
Darbies, thank you.
Yeah.
Left, everything is new manufactured expansion rivalries. We talked about this when you were out. The NBA released their schedule while you're on vacation, and they have a rivalry week.
The WNBA has one.
And it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen because it's matchups in the NBA that you're like,
like, who was ours? I didn't see our
I don't even think we get a game. I think we're relevant enough to play on rivalry.
Oh, is it only like, is it the TV games?
I think it was just the TV games, and some of it you're just like.
Is there one you can give me on top of your head that you remember?
No, let me go pull it up. But I just remember, like, when you think of rivalries in the NBA, what do you think of? Lakers and Celtics, probably one.
Celtics Sixers is a good one.
Pacers Knicks.
Pacers Knicks is a great one. Good poll by you there.
Here it is. Here are your rivalry week games. You ready for this?
Seattle Portland used to actually be one of the rare.
Used to be solid.
Real good ones.
You ready for rivalry week on
Thunder
the NBA?
Spurs has to be a new one too.
The Spurs rivalry of rivalry week is Spurs and Rockets.
No. That's Thunder.
That's just geography.
The Thunder.
Let me make sure this is this year and not last year. Nope, that was last year. Okay,
the Thunder Spurs is a better rivalry than the Rockets and Spurs.
Okay,
is.
Rivalry week. Hold on, 2020.
Is Miami Orlando rivalry you think about in the NBA?
If I remember,
the NBA doesn't have rivalries. Right. It's a year to year or a couple year buildup, and these teams hate each other. Here we go. Like Spurs Thunder right now, rivalry. 4 or 5 years ago,
yeah.
Nothing.
No, I do think this is actually this week, or this is this year. Yeah, now that I'm, it looks like it's this is updated from January 20th of 2026. No, that would have been last January. That's wrong. Anyways, they were dumb. It's beyond the point.
Can you, in the NFL, can you name me the best rivalry of every division?
Oh, good question.
Like, what's the best rivalry in the AFC East?
AFC East, I would go Bills and Patriots.
Okay. Is that just because of the recent success of
Yeah, they've been the two most relevant organizations. Mm. It was the Pats forever. The Bills could never beat them, and they would throw sex toys on the field to Tom Brady, and now the Bills have kind of reversed the trend, but then the Pats won the division and went to the Super Bowl.
AFC North is an easy one.
Steelers and Ravens.
AFC South.
Doesn't exist.
It does exist, though. What is the rivalry? I'd argue right now it feels like the rivalry is Houston-Jacksonville.
I tend to agree with you, but I also never would say that's a rivalry. But this, I agree with the, you know.
This one is the hardest one to me. AFC West. Because all of those fans, even if you laugh at the Raiders, what they are now, yeah. All of those fans probably maintain they're a part of the best rivalry in the division.
Chargers can't because they don't have fans, but the other three definitely do.
Like, I would say, have fans.
Well, I would say going back, if you look back historically, Broncos Raiders
would be the first one that jumps
they
out.
They can't stand each other for decades.
Well, but one team has won multiple Super Bowls recently, and the other one just got the one seed but didn't get to the Super Bowl.
Any combination to me of Denver, Kansas City, and the Raiders is a fine. You could tell me that's
the Chargers
the best
are not involved at all.
No, dude, they don't have fans. They don't count.
NFC East.
It's Eagles and Cowboys.
Over Giants and Cowboys?
For me, it is. Personally, but yes.
Are we going to dismiss the commie history?
I'm not dismissing. That's just the first one. If you ask me the first rivalry that jumps to my mind, it's that one.
NFC North.
Probably Packers and Bears.
Yeah, Packers, Bears.
And that's the oldest one, but my mind kind of morphs to Packers, Vikes.
That's a good rivalry. Because
the Bears were garbage for so long,
right?
And the Lions have been largely irrelevant.
NFC South, we all know it's Atlanta, Carolina. You throw the records out when Atlanta and Carolina play.
Oh, I was going to say Atlanta and Tampa or New Orleans and Atlanta.
AFC
Carolina
South and NFC South.
Have a rival. Are you kidding me?
Those two divisions are irrelevant. Nobody cares. Yeah. And NFC West, my money would be on Niners and Seahawks, but I'm also a little biased there.
But the Rams are here like.
They'd be great. Who do Seahawks fans hate more, though?
Probably the Niners.
It's not even close. Right?
You can ask that as a poll question.
Who do you hate more as a Seahawks fan? It has to be the Niners, right?
Who's the bigger threat to them this year, though?
Well, that's,
on paper, it's the Rams.
It's the Rams. The Rams have been the bigger threat.
Yeah.
I mean, at least they were last year, and they will be likely again this year. But there does seem to be more animosity from Seahawks fan towards 49er fan.
But see, and I would ask this as a 90s kid, is the Niner Cowboy, and Swag can chime in on this too, is, you know, he was, I think you were, what, Swag, were you 27 in 1980? The Cowboy-Niner game? So it's multiple decades.
Jeez, oh, Pete.
Jeez, oh, Pete. That's right.
R.I.P. Dolly Parton. Niners-Cowboys, is that a bigger rivalry to your old Cowboy fandom than anything in your division? Because I would argue for me as a Niner fan, that's the biggest rivalry in my mind.
That to me is a sign of you actually becoming a Charger fan is when you hate other teams in the AFC West.
Ooh, that's a great
Because you hated teams as a Cowboy fan. And I don't think
I
you have that hate.
I still hate all of them.
Right. You don't have that hate yet, do you? Do you hate the Broncos?
I hate the Broncos on principle from decades ago.
If the Chargers play the Niners, he will easily root against. I mean, he will
hate
the
that's
Niners.
An easy one because, again, the old fandom is
old rivalry.
It's not dead yet.
You're right.
It's like when you get a vaccine and the cells live in your body for a long time. You can't get rid of those cells. They're always going to be in there.
I don't think anything tops the hatred for the Giants and Eagles.
Who was a bigger rival for you as a Cowboy fan, the Giants or the Eagles?
The Niners.
Back then, it was the Giants.
The Niners.
The Eagles were hit and miss.
Yeah.
The Niners was different because whenever you played them, that was arguably the biggest game of the year.
Right.
And it was...
Isn't that what we're talking about in all
but
of this?
It's a different hatred. I don't think you despise the 49ers. You feared the 49ers a little more. You're like, they can actually ruin your damn year.
Yeah. The Niners and Cowboys are the relationship where both kind of hate each other, but they have such great sex that they want more of it.
You know how hot it is when you're together.
Exactly. It's kind of like how just, the magic...
But yes. The divisional hatred is a marriage you're never going to leave, but you should, but you're married for 35 years.
Yeah.
You're right. It's a different level of hatred.
It's a different sort of thing. It's more like Magic and Bird. They wanted to beat the crap out of each other, but there is, at some level, a respect for how they go about doing it, how good they've been, how consistent they've been, the fact that when you play them, there is always something on the line in that entire
decade. I've never respected the Cowboys, so that's a one-sided thing there. I've just hated them.
I'd like you to put a little respect on my Cowboys' name this year. That's Super Bowl champions to you. Thank you very much. Is there anything sexier on television than when the Cowboys and 49ers play? From an aesthetic standpoint...
Some people feel this about the Bears-Packers.
I get it. The Packers have icon. I mean,
I'm a little biased. I'm too biased probably to answer this question.
It just was every year of my childhood. It was the playoffs or an NFC title game with Pat Summerall and John Madden. And it just it takes me to a place mentally. It goes obviously further back than that to the catch. And like this has been going on forever.
Catch.
Like it just when I see that there's just
the white
something about
with the red
uniforms and color combos.
You know who was on the call of that game?
Vin Scully.
Yeah.
Vin Scully called the catch game. Yeah.
Is Yankees Red Sox in consideration?
It's absolutely in consideration.
The problem is the Niner Cowboys.
It's so shoved down your throat every year.
But the Niner Cowboy home away jerseys, they can choose to do either, and both will look good. Whereas the Yankee or Red Sox go just stale gray with Boston or New York on it. It's kind of boring.
Well, and to Swag's point, you also I get it 27 times a year, right? Like Niners and Cowboys when they
now,
would play.
Now Yankees Dodgers
would mean something.
Yankees, Dodgers.
Yeah, you can go that way.
But I don't like road grays. I think that's the uniqueness
baseball,
of the
NFL. Baseball, I can't do it because of the – I'm with you on the road grays.
The road grays take – like
Lakers, Celtics, gold
green,
and the green.
It's good.
Yeah. Buddy,
good
that's – and I don't like either of those teams.
It's a great look.
That's a pretty hard one to beat.
Iconic uniforms, color combos that match.
That's what made, to me, Dale Earnhardt and Jeff Gordon such a great rivalry. You got your little rainbow car with Jeff Gordon.
Rainbow
and then you got the all black –
the Terminator.
The Terminator.
Anyways, we had some Cougar fan chimed in as well. Somebody said, as a Coug fan, I view the Beavers as a friendly rival. I hope they have good seasons. I just don't want them to beat my Cougs.
Rival is a fine thing to kind of put it.
I will always wish the Huskies lose every game forever. Another one, rather than a rivalry, I think it should be a love affair. Got left behind and these two stuck together. And that's the side of it that I've always pushed against. I understand maybe some of that sentiment at first. Now you're competing against each other, dude. Like, this is the thing where you can say you don't hate and to your point about how it has become a rivalry. Let's fast forward to when do they play this year? November, right? Oregon State, Washington State sometime in November. Let's say Oregon State somehow beats Houston in their opener, hangs with Texas Tech, and you're a one-loss team going into that game in Pullman, Washington, and Washington State's having a tough season, and they beat you 24-21, and it takes away your chance to go to the playoff or win a conference championship, and it like knocks you out. Now Boise State's going to win it or whatever. It will brew. As time goes on, if you get those kind of matchups and those stakes, it will absolutely brew into something that you don't like.
I think the other part of that, too, is Patrick had shot a text into me because I referenced what he jokingly said, let's lead into a rivalry. It's like, I know he's joking. What's different about this is, and Oregon State's not playing Oregon, they'll pick that back up. I hate to sound so dismissive. I don't have a lot of optimism that that's ever going to be a good game again, but it's college football, and hey, maybe one year they get them.
Never say never.
Washington
Indiana.
State beat Washington 2 years ago.
They did, in the Apple Cup.
And they were in a bit of a dogfight last year in Pullman. They play again. So like that rivalry hasn't
died
been
off.
Separated enough for them to suddenly go, well, this blows. Like, whereas Oregon had reached such a ceiling or level of recruiting
in the
NIL,
last 2 years in particular.
And Oregon State lost everything that it was just so decimating that it's like it plateaus are different. Washington had to shut down their NIL. They were so broke.
Remember when Jed Fish ran a speed option to the short side of the field? People don't forget. Nice visor,
was that
though, Jed.
Pete Carroll's kid that called that player?
No, Jed Fish is the play caller. He has offensive
Brendan
coordinators,
Carroll
but
just there with
he's
a visor.
Just there wearing a headset.
But, by the way,
plays.
Another visor guy, Jed Fish.
Another visor guy. Last bit of college football / NFL news. This is from Jordan Reed. How you feeling right now if you see this? I love way too early mock drafts for next year. College football hasn't even begun yet. And a not shocking development, a lot of quarterbacks, very quarterback-heavy draft. Number one overall pick, according to Jordan Reed, is the Cleveland Browns trading up to number one via the Miami Dolphins and drafting Dante Moore out of Oregon. but the other team's near the top. Let me ask you this quickly, and then we'll go to the NFL. You're a good quarterback who's going to get drafted early. So you're Dante Moore, Arch Manning's in this conversation, CJ Carr, right? Some of the guys just
somebody's
going to
pop up in this too, by the way.
And
we're
somebody
not talking about
absolutely
the way Mendoza did,
right? Nobody had Mendoza going number one overall a year ago. Cleveland, Arizona, the Jets, and the Dolphins have the first four picks.
Cleveland,
Arizona, New York Jets, Miami Dolphins.
Yeah,
where do you hope you get drafted?
Arizona. They got guys I can throw to.
Nobody cares. You have no pressure on you. They've sucked forever. At least Miami has a Shula history, Marino, right? There's something there. That's the only sport I think those fans largely care about is football.
The Jets care way too much.
The Jets are in – their owner is in, he is absolutely
crazy.
Out to lunch.
What's the best football place? Is it Arizona?
It might be Arizona. If Harrison Jr. has a good year. You got
the best
Wilson,
football
Harrison
place
Jr.
where the best – are you talking about like environment and
no, like
fans?
To have a chance to succeed because
oh,
you
no,
have...
that's Arizona.
Yeah.
That receiving core and a tight end and
the Browns are never
ever...
good.
No.
Well, he's a new quarterback. He's got to find one.
They've only had that problem since they came back in 2002.
Now's the time. They've been
now
waiting.
It's different.
They've been holding out for a management position. Now they got one. There you go, a little college football NFL mixture. Jordan Reed has Dante Moore going number one overall to Cleveland. If that happens, buddy, Godspeed. Let's get to some tidbits out of the National Football League from yesterday. An injury concern to one major player, and then we'll get to the Dirty Poll coming up top of the hour. Back after this, 105.1 FM, The Fan. All right, welcome back in. Dirty Poll coming up top of the hour. Who's number 8? We'll find out 14 minutes from now. Who could it be? Oh, what do we got?
Well, I only play this because it's an important note.
Yes.
One, very famous. Two, it's the trifecta officially.
Oh, no. Somebody passed away?
Hayden Panettiere.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's right.
Dolly Parton.
Who's the third?
Tim Curry.
Tim Curry.
Oh. Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh!
Guy from Home Alone 2.
Did he just die?
Died at 80 years old.
Really?
Yeah. So when you watch Home Alone 2 in a couple months.
R.I.P., man.
The mom, the dad, and the bellhop all dead in that scene. And the guy that gave Kevin McAllister directions in the hotel, President of the United States. What a movie.
How dare you forget Muppet Treasure Island, too?
I actually loved Muppet Treasure
Ferngully.
Island.
Ferngully. How dare you forget Ferngully.
Great pull there on Ferngully.
Ferngully solid.
Dude,
the Congo. Remember the Congo?
I do remember
he
Congo.
He was the bad guy in
he
Congo, was.
Was
he not?
Yes, he was.
I'm looking through the rest of
Tim Curry, 80 years old. Dolly Parton, Tim Curry, and Hayden Panettiere are your trifecta celebrity three.
Can I give you a take?
Uh-huh.
Not a really of a take, just a fact, really. I've never seen the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Hmm. I saw it a long time ago.
Been a minute. Was it your cup of tea? It's a musical, right?
Eh.
Yeah. Swag, have you seen it, Rocky Horror Picture
Every
Show?
Every movie you named, I like a little more than that.
Than the Rocky Horror Picture Show?
Not for a long, long, long time.
You remember when it came out, though? Was it a pretty big deal when it came out, or is it one of those that like got bigger as time went on, like a cult classic?
With the cult following, and it would be midnight showings of it, and people would bring the rotten
tomatoes.
They
still do that now, right? And throw stuff around.
I think they do. Yeah. Yeah, it was more about the experience.
Also, he was it.
He was it. That's
right. He's the original it.
From the OG movie?
Yes.
Wow. Hell of a career, man.
Hell of a career.
R.I.P., there's your big three. Tim Curry passing away. We've all been desperate. You know, it's happened. Everybody's been there before, where maybe you send a text late at night, doesn't get responded to. Then you send another text, and that one doesn't get responded to. You send another text.
You up?
And that one maybe gets responded to.
Are you describing my current
I'm not talking about guest booking.
Back and forth with guests?
I'm not talking about guest booking.
Because it feels like a lot of me.
I'm talking about booking prostitutes in East Palestine, Ohio.
Oh.
And that became the funniest tidbit of this entire story for me, is that some of the details are starting to come out. Jed York called himself Joe in the response.
Called himself Joe, yes.
Called himself Joe. Hey, Joe here, just looking.
Look, if you ever get caught in this and you use Brandon... We're going to have a conversation.
My name's Brandon Sprague, graduated from Morgan State,
and
my wife and two daughters.
I'd imagine Joe Montana's going to see Jed York at some point and go, really?
Dude, really? Joe?
Of all? You couldn't go Jerry?
Jerry? What about Jerry, huh? Jed?
Would you go Brandon over Swag?
Like Jason, he would swag.
I could see Jason.
A girl would say no if you said, my name is Swag.
Swag. That's a no for
in
me.
A prostitution text?
Well, how bad do you feel if you end up getting arrested for this? That he sent multiple responses, or excuse me, messages that did not get responded to, and he kept sending messages. Somebody, and at the third one, an undercover agent responded like, yeah, let's meet up in the parking lot, baby.
He also is the one, by the way, over that filed for divorce.
He was the one that filed for divorce from his wife.
Yeah, I saw that revelation come out. I still am stuck on the
Wheat Hill
mobile community.
Needing
to send out a statement because an NFL owner wanted some sex.
He was looking for some strange, man. And the first two no responses should have been the alert to Joe York that, hey, maybe this is not a good idea. Yeah.
Did he use his last name?
I don't think he did.
Himself?
I think
it was just Joe.
My name's Joe. I'm looking for some help here. And did not go well for him. That one made me chuckle out loud reading the details of that. One of the bigger stories defensively early in the year was likely to be Miami rookie Reuben Bain coming into the season. An awesome year at Miami last year, now in Tampa. He suffered an AC sprain. They're saying it's nothing serious. He is expected to be ready for week one. They opened the season on the road at Cincinnati. And the irony there is that the same thing happened on the other side of that yesterday. Did you see the video of Ja'Marr Chase coming up hobbling in Cincinnati practice?
Yeah, but I think about an hour later he was doing a radio interview, and he's like, I'm good.
Just thought he maybe hyperextended it a little bit.
So it sounds like they will both be okay and ready to go for week one. Those videos, when you get them, are always tough. Did you see Hard Knocks last night?
You know, I actually I watched the Vince Young thing.
Yeah.
Totally spaced Hard Knocks.
I was watching a bit of it, and I slowly started to fall asleep, and so I didn't finish the entire episode, but they did have the Jake Bobo injury in there, and it was, man, those are so hard to
watch.
They
really like Jake Bobo in that organization.
Love him, and you see everybody's reaction on the Seattle sideline, because it was just running a simple, it looked like an out route, and it was a non-contact, knee kind of buckles. He goes down, immediately starts screaming, and you're like, oh, this is uncomfortable, and he's laying on the field withering in pain.
Calvin Austin had that yesterday, too. He was carted off, and they said it looked like a pretty awful knee injury. You know, I need to watch the new Hard Knocks because I have enjoyed the season, even though I'm not a Seahawk fan.
Next week's the week that I'll finish the episode from last night probably today. And the next week, like, football's actually here. And so my desire for a football hole filler isn't quite as what it is in the first couple of weeks of the show.
I also assume they're going to cut that defensive tackle who learned to play football playing 8-on-8 in Hawaii. There's a reason I learned about that guy. It's because he's going to get cut.
You got to have one of those every year.
That being said, you know, Sam Darnold's doing Alaska Airlines commercials right now. Have you seen these? He's wearing an Alaska jersey, and he's like, we fly to, and then they cut, and then you could tell it's edited. He's like, Rome. And then he just labels off four others. It's just like no emotion.
That's pretty funny.
He's starting to become a star a little bit, right? I think he's been one of the underrated pieces of Hard Knocks. He's been very good.
Super humble guy, unassuming.
Yeah. And you can, he just doesn't have any, like, because he went through so much crap before winning that, obviously winning the Super Bowl means a great deal to him, right? That's the peak of his profession. It has a, there's an aura about him that's like, yeah, and I could just as easily lose next week. Like, I think he has such a carefree nature, and some guys that can change them, sometimes for the worst, and some guys, it just has an impact, and I don't know if it's going to have an impact. Like, I wonder how much staying power Sam Darnold's about to have in the NFL.
It's a big question, man.
He's 28, 29 years old.
Not that old. He's got two more years left on his deal. What if you go on a run and he throws 35 touchdowns this year? You know what he's going to want next offseason?
Well, yeah, and I assume if they're good, the Seahawks are going to pay it because you don't want to lose a quarterback, right? Yeah.
It reminds me kind of I think made the argument a couple weeks ago on Dante Moore, who certainly has the expectations of the world on his shoulders this year. But I think it was you, and you argued that, you know, you can make an argument from last year, a year ago now, he had more pressure because he wasn't established as a starter yet. Like, his only experience playing was getting benched and being depressed and throwing pick sixes and being a laughingstock as a bust. And so last year it was like, is he going to start? Is he going to be good? And now you're projected to go in the first round of the draft next year. Even with some of those bad performances last year, you still would have been a top five pick. And according to Todd McShay, they would have considered taking you number one overall. And so it reminds me kind of that conversation of, he's now established himself as a starter, and now you're kind of loosey-goosey, dude. The guy's got a Super Bowl out of all this.
Yeah.
Like, what do you got to lose now, man?
And I think that's a great approach to have. And I just kept wondering, is he just going to stay now? Is he just one of these, like, top 10 guys? Or
can he play him well? Yes.
Does this have a shelf life and it's a 3 years and then it starts to fizzle again? Because so many things change within an NFL team year to year. So I keep wondering about that. Now he's in commercials. He's in Hard Knocks. He's, you know, getting love and consideration. He wasn't in the top 10. And people are like, yo, how is he not in the top 10? He won the Super Bowl. It's usually how we do this, right? Yep. Guy has a good rookie year. He's in the top 5.
Right.
Guy wins the Super Bowl. He's not in the top 10. It's ridiculous. So I am wondering about the staying power of a Sam Darnold. There's other quarterbacks in the league that are like this, of like, what is the staying power of some of these guys? Is Darnold about to have an 8-year run here, or is this a 4 years and thanks, that was awesome.
Right, flash in the pan kind of, that was crazy he did that.
Yeah, but he's been playing at such a high level, it seems ridiculous to wonder if it's just a flash in the pan, you're not going to do it again.
Tend to agree with you there, man. When you've been through a monographic and seeing ghosts live on television, I think anything seems easier after that.
I'm with you.
He's living a good life. Last note out of the National Football League, we mentioned, speaking of Seattle, resetting the corner market a week or two ago, whenever that was. The other guy who's waiting on his extension is getting frustrated with his franchise, and that is Christian Gonzalez, former Duck in Buffalo. Had a quote saying, I'm frustrated, but I'm focused on the season. I'm focused on here now. Hmm. He was back at practice. He said, I'm focused on week 1 at this point. I mean, it's been all off season. So I feel like the line of today is, it is what it is. He said he's still optimistic a deal will be completed. Their general manager came out, or their head of player personnel, said he's a lead player. We want him here. We're on record saying we want him here. It's one of those, like, what are we waiting for? He's only 24 years old. He's been awesome. He will probably reset the corner market. But to hear a player come out when you have Super Bowl expectations saying, I'm frustrated, not ideal a week and a half before the season begins. But that's the latest out of New England. Christian Gonzalez still waiting on a new contract. The Dirty Poll will kick off the final hour of the show. Who is number 8? You'll find out next. We'll get the Statter story coming up at 9:27. It's a loaded final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague, 105.1 FM The Fam.